Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Pastor Bob Thune. And today I have a special guest with me on the podcast. So no Dusty White, no Chris Hemmelman, but a guest who's come from the other side of the world to sit in the podcast studio. Although he was just making fun of me for mispronouncing his name like an American. And so, my friend, you won. Except it's spelled Johan, and so I can't. Yeah. Go ahead.
No,
I want you to give us the.
That was a 7 out of 10.
Thank you.
Okay, you passed.
That's like a D. So in school, why don't you give us the? How do you say your name?
It's easier than the name Bob.
Yeah, it probably is.
It's Johan. So Johan Verster is my name.
Yeah. So Johan is South African,
yeah,
and a friend of mine, going back for about a decade now, and has made the trek over to the U.S. You're on sabbatical, and so it's a joy to have you sitting here and talking about your story a little bit and talking about what God's doing on the other side of the world. Thanks for joining me. How would you want the listeners to sort of just have some context for who you are and where you minister? Tell us a little bit about just your life.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just to say again, Bob, thank you so much for even hosting me the last few days. It's already been such a great time to be here. And so, loving it and really been so amazed with things here at Coram Deo. It's absolutely brilliant. So like you said, I'm grew up, and that's a longer story that we can delve into later maybe, but grew up in South Africa. Currently I'm married, got married to Anshin and got 4 kids, Leah, Mane, Maya and Finn. And I'm pastoring a church in Pretoria, which is in the northern part. For those who care about geography of South Africa, it's the northern part of the country. It's actually the capital of South Africa, Pretoria. And have been pastoring a church there that we planted back in 2010, sort of on Easter, pretty much Easter 2010. And still there.
Happy birthday to your church a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Easter. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's been just thankful that the Lord is keeping us, holding us, and he's building his church. And so, yeah, grateful for that.
How did we first meet? We first met through Acts 29 somehow.
It was, yeah. I think... I don't think you will necessarily remember it. The very first time that I met you was in Miami. We were there down in Miami for Acts 29 retreat. And I recall you actually doing a session. It was a small session with a number of guys in a room.
Yeah. It was on eldership, I think.
It was an eldership stuff. And that was the very first time I met you. I quickly grabbed you, I think, afterwards, had a few words with you, and then once or twice after that, again, fast forward a few years later in Nashville, that was where we were going through quite difficult things at our church, not at an elder level, really having to make difficult sort of pastoral decisions, and somewhere, I mean, after the meeting or the conversation in Miami, I sort of kept my eye on you and what you were doing and what you were writing, and so I reached out to you. We had a lunch.
I was going
to
say we sat down.
Yeah, I think we sat down. We had a meal together. And I was bombarding you with questions on specific, how do you, probably what you would call practical theology, but it was actually thinking through very important Christian doctrines, but how do you apply it with elders in a church, in the life of the church? And we sat down for a meal that was super helpful. And since that day and that meeting in Nashville, I've basically been stealing from Bob and Coram Deo everything that I can in terms of policy documents and other things that you've written. I've said this to Bob, but we use quite a few of the material, both of Coram Deo, but also the gospel-centered material that you've written. We use at our church. I've joked, Bob's not going to like it when I say this, but Bob is basically the bishop of Lichtpunt back in South Africa, that we often say, well, this is what Bob thinks about this subject, or this is how they do this thing.
That can be good or bad.
Yeah, no, it's not really. It's not. You're not like really. I don't want to get you fired or anything. You're not the bishop, but we as a church have been really, really blessed by Coram Deo in many different ways over the last, especially the last 6 years or so. We might get into that later because you visited us.
Yeah, you guys invited me to come over there. That was actually one of the big blessings for me. You invited me to come and speak both at Lichtpunt and then more broadly in some of the church planting work you're doing, and you let me bring my son along. And so that was a real formative experience for him. I think I said, hey, I'd love to do this. Can I, you know, can I bring my son and, you know, can he be along? And so he, it was a really great formative moment in his life. He was a high school student at the time. And it was a real joy. I'd never been to South Africa before. So it was a great joy to just sort of see your world, see your church, meet your people, serve the churches that you, you know, get to know a little bit about just the dynamic of what God's doing there. So it was a real joy for me. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and it was for us the same. And so I think from that moment onwards, so that's now probably the last, what would it be, 6 years or so.
Yeah.
Increasingly, I think our friendship and also our partnership with Coram Deo and has just grown. And like I said, there's so many different areas of our life where Coram Deo is like 5 years or sort of 6 years older than Lichtpunt. And so it's helped in a very helpful way, just that one or two steps ahead of us in so many things. And so it's been, it's not too far away that it's unreachable for us. But in so many things, as we've come through the ups and the downs and the big questions of church life, it's been so helpful to drop your email and say, oh, what are you doing this thing? Or have you written anything about that? Or what's your thoughts on these things? We've had a number of Zoom calls over the years, and it's been a blessing to both me and our elder team in church. Yeah.
Well, and so if you're listening and you're a church planter or a leader, I think that is one of the things all of us need is just like, who can I look to that's a few years ahead of where we are that I trust? And so that was, you know, I had those leaders early on in Coram Deo. And I think every, you know, there's a beautiful thing that the Lord does in connecting leaders together where we can learn from one another and where there's a sense of like, hey, how have you crossed this boundary or dealt with this challenge or solved this problem? Or that's been a really beautiful thing. The other thing that I have enjoyed particularly about our friendship is that there, you know, for an American, it's very helpful to get outside the North American context. I want to know, like, is what we're talking about relevant somewhere else in the world that doesn't have the same cultural context we're in, that doesn't have the same dysfunction that we do, that doesn't have the same obstacles and barriers to the gospel. And so it's been fun, not just with you, but other friends around the world, to just have sort of a sounding board for, as we talk about gospel ministry, how do we make sure we're not talking about it in a way that's imprisoned in an American context, but that really does cross cultures and that's applicable in different places where their human beings are the same, but the cultural background is
different. Exactly. And I think that is, that's certainly the case. And I mean, this is maybe one of the blessings of being in a place like South Africa. Of course, coming from sort of a Commonwealth UK British background, and that's part of my backstory. I don't know if we're going to get to that, but I spent quite a bit of time living in London, came to faith in London, and that's another story altogether, and went into ministry initially in London. And so, and again, lots of the more reformed evangelical UK sort of church scene is again heavily influenced by the Australians. So there's another, and one of the blessings for a place like us in South Africa is that we have the we're fortunate enough to have all three of those voices speaking into our Christian and biblical formation. So there's the UK scene, there's the American influence or voice, and then also the Australian one, and lots of similarities there, but also differences. And I think it's almost a blessing for us, because sometimes, I don't know if the Americans would say this, but having lived in the UK, they would certainly say that there's a sense, sometimes a bit of a rivalry, and they almost, a theological snobbery between the big sort of, you know, what side of the pond you're on. And so we often sense that when we lived and we're heavily influenced and studied even in the UK, you know, that the Brits would not necessarily really often listen to the Americans that much, and the Americans also not so much to the to the Brits, and even don't even aware of lots of the good stuff happening coming from Australia.
Yeah.
And so that was I thank the Lord for that we from our formative years have had those different voices speaking in, lots of similarity theologically, but also slightly different areas where each one of those camps have got their strengths, but also their weaknesses. And so it's a helpful, it's a wonderful place for us to to, in a sense, get the best of all the worlds without having to narrow ourselves down to just one theological camp or tribe.
We Americans just assume that the whole world wants to know what we have to say about anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how we live. It's just that the world obviously is just looking
That's why I'm here.
I remember Tim Keller saying that when he moved to New York City, the three people he listened to were Dick Lucas, Martin Lloyd-Jones,
and John Stott.
And John Stott, because those guys were British evangelicals who, because of where the culture was in London, he just felt like that's more akin to where New York City is right now. And it's helpful for me to have someone like Keller sort of make that connection, because the British evangelical stream in particular has been really helpful to me in just understanding how to disconnect some of the gospel things from some of the particular North American burdens.
And I think that's probably the strength of the UK scene. And I've heard Keller say this, and I've also heard Mark Dever say this, because he also spent a bit of time there. Both of them quite close relationships with especially St. Helens. It's again part of the backstory, but my first job in the UK was in finance, and it was right next to St. Helens. So I went every Tuesday and Thursday to the lunchtime talks listening to Dick Lucas.
Yeah.
And it was just around the corner from also listening to John Stott. And lots of those guys within English evangelicalism, the Dick Lucases and John Stott, really come from the Charles Simeon tradition. Mm-hmm. So you would know the Simeon Trust. Mm-hmm. Again, who's the guy who's the from Chicago?
David Helm.
He also really was influenced there, and hence the Charles Simeon Trust. I think that's where that comes from. Because that's really the, in a sense, in the evangelical UK scene, Charles Simeon was really the guy hundreds of years ago, and whose real strength and defining mark was expository preaching, looking at the text, trying to see what does the text say and how does it link to Jesus. And in a sense, everything that a Dick Lucas and a John Stott really especially those two, because they come from the bit more Anglican tradition where Simeon came from. That's really the philosophy to this day, and lots of the proclamation trust and all of that sort of whole tradition really was birthed out of that very specific Charles Simeon sort of way of having a high view of Scripture, but trying to really get the noses of the congregants into the Bible to see what does it say, how does it link up with the gospel, and then how does it apply to every area of your life? And that's, in a sense, what John Stott and Dick Lucas and those guys. So that's the blessing of having spent time there. But then the Americans have been such a blessing in so many other areas of church life, both, I think, more the systematic theology categories historically, but also then the practical thinking through, how do you... You Americans are just so brilliant. I said this to you before. You're so good at going for it.
Practical theology.
Yeah, and it's like you just got a way of convincing us that this must be the way that you sort of do things, and it's a blessing to the rest of the world.
So, well, that's kind of you. Let's talk about your story a little bit. Yeah. So you mentioned coming to faith in London. I'd love to sort of, why don't you talk to us about just sort of your growing up, and then how you came to faith in Christ.
Yeah. So, and again, I don't know if your many of your people would know this, and I don't want to sort of give you the whole history of South Africa, because I could, and it might be interesting or very boring. but to say that like my family and my ancestors, arrived in South Africa in the late 1600s. So we've been in Africa for a very long time, since the 1600s already. And so we truly see ourselves, even though I'm from a sort of a Dutch descent, we've been in the country for more than three centuries and see ourselves as Africans and love Africa, love South Africa. The reason why I begin there is if you know a bit about sort of the history of both how lots of Europeans came to South Africa, it was really through primarily two movements of immigration, the one being the French Huguenots, because of the Counter-Reformation, fleeing Catholicism and fleeing the persecution in France. As well as then lots of the Dutch that came actually just before the French Huguenots into South Africa. So from the beginning, at a very strong Protestant and very deeply, deeply religious background. And that's sort of, in a sense, that then with a number of other things happening in the country in the 1700s, 1800s, really formed my ancestors, who are the Afrikaans sort of people in South Africa. And the reason why I start there is because that, as in, and I think there's quite similarities with America, with lots of Americans who have a long heritage of Christian foundations, that there's, of course, a massive blessing in that, you know, to have, you know. So I still grew up in, and it's still the case to this day, that most of the, at least Afrikaans schools would be Christian schools. Even if they're public schools, they're Christian schools. You still do, you have morning devotions often, and at the school, even if it's a public, quote-unquote, secular school, you would still, in many spaces, it's dwindling down now, but when I was growing up, it's what you would call cultural Christianity. So it's not, at least in my understanding, it's not nominal Christianity. Nominal Christianity, simply put, would be if there's a census in the country and you have to tick a box somewhere, you would say you're a Christian, because you would not necessarily say you're a Muslim, or you wouldn't call yourself an atheist. But it's not exactly just simply nominal Christianity, it's cultural Christianity. You still do the church thing every now and then. You'll say a prayer before you have a meal. It's that kind of thing.
It's like the Midwest was until about 30 years ago, like the UK, again, where Anglicanism has shaped so much of British culture, that there's still sort of like a heavy religious influence in the culture.
Yeah, so I don't want to go into too much detail. I don't know how much time we've got, but the reality is that's the world that I grew up in, is what would be cultural Christianity. So we would go to church every now and then, say a prayer before a meal, and everyone, almost everyone in our culture growing up, this is now the 80s, 90s, most Afrikaans people would say that they're Christian. And that would have been me, even though my family, we didn't go to church that much. But like many others, by the time I got to high school, it was unraveling, and I wasn't in any shape or form a Christian. And by the time I went to university, I studied finance originally. By the time I was in university, and I don't know what you call it in the US, probably it's the place where students live. I don't know what the
dormitory.
It's like a fraternity almost. Yeah. Is that the thing?
Uh-huh.
With 300 guys living together, and it's chaos in every possible way. By that time, I clearly said I wasn't a Christian, and that was in a sense also quite unique in an Afrikaans cultural Christian world. I knew enough of the Bible that I knew that Jesus is in no way or form Lord over my life, and I didn't want him to be. And maybe that was actually a good sign, actually, of the Spirit already working, ironically, that I remember a day when a guy on the Christian, he was a part of the sort of a Christian committee at our bigger fraternity, or our bigger dorm that we were lived in. And he asked me, "Are you a Christian?" And I said, "No." And that's not something that many Afrikaans guys would have said, but I knew that I don't love Jesus in a way that it's going to, in any way, I'm not going to be trusting in him, and I'm not going to be in any way build my life and shape my life around him. And so that was when I was at university, and then I went to London. As a non-Christian, went to London to go and work in finance, and the Lord's kindness and in His perfect timing, my first boss in the UK was a Christian older man. He was in his 60s. His kids were already out of school, and he just, I still to this day, he's passed away now. I don't know why he was so good to me, but he saw this young South African guy and he pulled me in. He was really good in helping and encouraging and supporting me as a young South African in London. And he eventually invited me to a Bible study. I didn't want to say no to my new boss. And so I went along to a Bible study, and it absolutely, after the first night there, it blew my mind. They simply opened the Bible. They were working through chapters or passages in a book of a Bible, reading it, trying to understand what is it saying, what does that mean, and how does that make sense in Jesus, and how does that apply to every aspect of your life. And even after the first night, there was something magical about it. By the third week, I really in a very strong, I was 24 at that stage, in a very strong sense felt all the stuff that I grew up hearing about God and Jesus and the Bible this and the cross that, it became real and present and living to me. And I probably 2 weeks later for the first time truly understood the gospel, and I really understood, this is actually why Christians always talk about Jesus. And so that was really my conversion, and that was when I was 24 and still worked in finance for a bit. And then after a few years, still lived in London, quit my job in the UK, and started working there for a church, did an internship, apprenticeship. And then there's a story after that. I don't know how much I must go into the detail.
Well, we want the detail. What was the sort of shift from working in finance to working in ministry and in the church?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was a young, that was between the ages of say 24 and 26, and I was when I had a very, I would say it was a quite a radical conversion experience. I remember phoning my dad in South Africa saying, "Listen, I've become a Christian," and he said, "Like, what are you talking about?
You've always
been a Christian." I said, "No, like, look, really a Christian." And he said, "I said whatever." I phoned my girlfriend at that stage. I was in a 6-year relationship. She wasn't a Christian, and she didn't know what to make of that. And it sort of eventually that relationship sort of died off. I phoned my best friend in South Africa, and I think all of them sort of probably thought, "Well, this is Johan. He gets quite excited about things in life, and it's going to be like a cold. He'll get over it." And I really never did. And increasingly got involved at a local church in the providence of God, lived in Wimbledon, and in the street that we lived in before I came to faith. Just down the road from there was a brilliant, brilliant church. Small church at that stage, but the Lord was doing amazing work through them. I'll get into that maybe, because it's critical to even the story of our church then. But I got stuck into that church. Both me and my housemates, other South African young guys who lived with me, we started joining that church. It was at that stage, this church, now they've got an amazing facility, and it's quite a big church in London, and quite an influential evangelical church in London now. But at that stage, they were meeting in a school hall. I grew up in one of the biggest mega churches in South Africa. But this church in a school hall, 100 people, 150 at that stage, I've never experienced anything like it. It was not flashy, not sexy in any way, shape, or form. But they were doing three things that we thought, and I thought as a new believer, was cutting edge. I thought, like, who came up with this idea of church? They did three things. And that's all they did. They opened up the Bible, and they made sure that whenever a pastor is preaching, he's got nothing to say. Scripture has everything to say. And he showed you what God is saying through the text, and he was applying it. He was showing how it makes sense in Jesus and what that means for your life. I thought that was revolutionary. I never, ever heard in a church, growing up in church, ever heard preaching like that before. It blew me and everyone in my context who sort of experienced that the first time. The second thing that this church did well was community. Old people, children in between, but they were living like they were family. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like a program. They would just felt like a family. And it, again, having grown up in church, but in quite a dead religious sort of sense, you could feel the presence of God in a very natural family, like you've come home kind of feeling. And then the third thing that this church was doing at that stage, this is now since the early 2000s, as they were aggressively planting churches. At that stage already, they planted 4 or 5 other churches. 2 years later, from joining that church, I quit my job and I started doing an internship there. The reason for that, to answer your question, the reason why I made the transition was really, I was for 2 years so hungry to learn more, so keen to just serve and be, that I ended up as a, between the ages of 24 and 26, I did everything everywhere. I was helping on Sundays every night of the week. I was either at a Bible study, I roped in a few friends and we started a Bible study. I helped the youth, I helped with the children stuff, like everything you could. I wanted to be there, even though I was working in finance and I had quite a good job for a young intern, a graduate position in finance. I felt like when I'm at the church, and if I could open up the Bible and share the things that I was discovering, it felt like life was making sense. I felt like a fish in water. The pastor of that church, a guy by the name of Richard Koken, I don't know if you would know him, he said to me, hey, why didn't you do an apprenticeship? This is a year in after I was, 2 years in after I was a Christian. Because you're always here. It looks like you're loving it. Why did you come and do an internship? Quit your job and come and do this. And I said, no. He's like, no way. My life dream was to go and retire on a golf court estate somewhere in South Africa or wherever. And I knew I needed money for that. And I was on the way to having a fairly decent life in finance. And so I said, no. And he asked again and he asked again. And I, after a while, didn't have any good reason not to, because everything that I was involved with in the local church was that gave me joy and it made sense. And so then I made an agreement with a company that I was working for and I said to them, listen, can I have a year off and go and do an internship at this church? And they said I could come back. And so I made the deal with them and I started doing an internship at the church. And after 3 months, I just knew this is what I want to do and what I have to do. Even if it's not always, I think calling often is not necessarily, it's not only the things that you enjoy. It's like the burdens that you have. And it just felt this is what I have to do. And so then I started doing an internship. And a while after that, we actually then planted a little evening congregation of expat South Africans in Afrikaans, in my first language, in London. With this church, they were aggressively planting churches. And one of the things that they suggested is, listen, there's thousands upon thousands of Afrikaans, South Africans in the southwest of London. And many of them, there's opportunity because many of them from a cultural background would enjoy maybe doing something in their first language, but so many of them don't know Jesus. And we did that and planted that church eventually, and the Lord blessed that in an insane way. Lots and lots and lots of young Afrikaans-speaking South Africans coming to faith, saying exactly what I experienced, never having heard the Bible taught that way, never experiencing community in a local church, being like a family. And thirdly, this idea of not inward looking but outward looking, planting churches, trying to, by means of planting churches, trying to reach others in different places. And so in that church that we planted in Wimbledon, and seeing the Lord working, myself and another friend of mine who lived with me in London, who was also in that church, he was not in ministry at that stage, but we lived in the same house, and we started dreaming together and saying, but listen, we have to go back to South Africa. I wasn't actually initially planning on going back to South Africa. But we felt burdened, feeling that so many of our friends, so many of our families weren't Christian. Not even in the cultural sense, they were just not Christian at all. And so we felt burdened and called to go back to South Africa to plant a church. This is roughly 2005-06. And so that's where the dream and the desire for Lichtpunt started. But in our context, we felt that we would need theological training to have credibility in our world to plant a church. It's not in all places in the world like that, but in our context, it was necessary for us to have, you know, proper theological training. So in order to plant Lichtpunt, we left the UK, moved down to Cape Town in South Africa to go to seminary and study and during the next 3 to 4 years while being in Cape Town studying, we would fly up every holiday to Pretoria. And we started a small Bible study group with four of our friends, and the Lord sort of kept it going. And every holiday we would go up and do like a weekend away with these guys and started getting them ready to be the core group of the church. And by 2010, April, we launched with 27 people, 25 of our mates, and my mother and his mother.
That's awesome.
That was.
Well, let's pause there for a minute. I want.
Sorry, that's a lot of info.
No, that's amazing. That's and actually, this sort of, I think it's very helpful for the average listener to sort of hear the story of the journey from conversion to calling and readiness to plant a church, because I think, like you said, that doesn't happen overnight. And there is usually in most people's story a period of learning, training, calling, asking, you know, where does God want me in the world? And so it's actually sort of fascinating to just hear all the sort of shape that took between 24 and then how old were you when you actually in 2010 when you planted the church?
I think it was 31.
Okay. So that's so 7 years.
Yeah, and that's not a long time. So even in there, there's lots. I mean, the Lord was gracious. So I don't know, you know, what the time frame with these things should be. In hindsight, I said this to you yesterday. I sometimes think, oh, probably would have been better if we waited a few years before we planted. I think maybe even at 31, we were a bit young.
Yeah.
But at that stage, we loved the Lord. We were seeking to do His will. It felt right. I don't think, you know, there's of course no recipes or formulas that you can cut and paste and say everyone will be exactly the same. The Lord was gracious to us both with a small church plant in London. I mean, there we were only, in a sense, believers for a young time. They were very heavily involved. And so that they were holding our hands, even to the point in the beginning years of every single sermon. My sermon I sent to the pastors of the main church, and they would help us. It was a wonderful learning school. So they were checks and balances for us not to go off the rails. But
I'm actually going to make our listeners come back next week to hear the rest of the story. It's like there's a Paul Harvey. He's an American radio host, and he used to always say, and that's the rest of the story. So you're going to have to come back next episode to hear the rest of the story. So thank you. And next week, listeners, you'll hear round two of this story.